Welcome to Earth Matters, environmental and social justice stories from around Australia and beyond. This episode is produced at the studios of 3CR in Naarm, Melbourne, on the unceded lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. Earth Matters is distributed nationally through the Community Radio Network. I'd like to pay my respects to the elders, past and present, and extend that respect to other First Nations Australians who may be listening to this broadcast. I'm your host, Claudia Craig. Welcome to another episode of Earth Matters.
94% of the tree cover in Gaza is destroyed, and the ocean, the Mediterranean Sea around Gaza is polluted, and the water aquifer in Gaza is totally unusable thanks to the Israeli Zionist colonial attempt to destroy lives and livelihood of both people and nature in Gaza.
Today's episode of Earth Matters explores the ongoing destruction of Palestinian land and waters through war, colonization, and climate change. We speak to a man who has led environmental and peace campaigns across five decades, a champion of sustainability at home in occupied Palestine, and a 2025 Nobel Peace Prize nominee. Professor Mazin Kamsieh is the founder and volunteer director of the Palestine Museum of Natural History and Palestine Institute of Biodiversity and Sustainability at Bethlehem University in occupied Palestine. I spoke to Professor Kamsieh in the lead-up to the two-year anniversary of Israel's military onslaught in Gaza following the Hamas attack of October 7, 2023. Before we moved to the current situation, I wanted to learn what Palestinian land was like historically, before colonization and war.
Well, this is the Fertile Crescent. This is where our ancestors developed agriculture first around the globe, domesticating plants and animals. It's a very rich area in habitats. And the connectivity of humans to nature, of course, goes back to ancient times, from the time that we actually migrated out of Africa and settled first in Palestine, Homo sapiens 150,000 years ago left Africa to Palestine first, and then the rest of the world as far as your country and others. So this is the place. This is the center. This is the center of development of civilizations because of that long history. So when you say importance, it's not a matter of importance for people. It's a matter of that's their lives. It's what they have lived for 150,000 years. Of hunting, gathering, and 12,000 years of settled communities here, living in harmony with the land and with nature, and that's what is the country. And this is where we first domesticated things like wheat and barley and lentils and olives, and also domesticated animals like goats and sheep and donkeys and camels and so forth. The reason it became the first area on Earth, even before any other area, to have domestication of animals and plants is because it had rich biodiversity of animals and plants, and also mild climate, which allows for human habitation and for human domestication of animals and plants, predictable climate, etc. This has, of course, changed dramatically over the past couple of hundred years with climate change and habitat destruction and colonialism and so forth.
So speaking of colonization and the impacts and threats to the environment and the ability of Palestinian people to sustain themselves, can you talk to those impacts and give us some concrete examples of the way in which the environment has been affected?
Well, as you know, around the world, this is a problem, this is a challenge. Colonialism and greed has devastated the habitats of many continents, many countries that the European colonizers invaded, including in, of course, your country, where you have invasive species and habitat destruction. In North America, for example, how many virgin forests are left after the European colonization, and how many rivers were diverted, and how much of the indigenous fauna and flora was devastated by the European colonization. So this is a global phenomenon, and certainly here in Palestine, it is part of this global phenomenon, because we had the European Zionist colonization that started under the British rule in 1918 and continues to this day, relentlessly destroying our habitats, destroying our nature. We, the indigenous people of the land, have lived in harmony, as I said earlier, with nature for 12,000 years of domestication of animals and plants. But this rather recent colonization over the past 100 years or so has really caused tremendous damage to our environment, with invasive species, with destruction of local trees, with the diversion of waters like the Jordan River water that was diverted from Lake Tiberias, resulting in drop in the Jordan River levels from 1,350 million cubic meters per year to only 20 million cubic meters per year. That's barely a stream. It's no longer a river, and it's polluted at that. Many species suffered, but also, of course, humans suffered from these activities of colonization. And, of course, with climate change now adding to, you know, making things even much, much worse, thanks to the same factors, which is greed and human idiocy of trying to control nature and its people, who are the indigenous people, who are in harmony with nature, to try and destroy all of that and create richer and richer billionaires and corporations. This is indeed what is happening here and happening around the world. Worse here, because it's in the news, if you want. There's a genocide and an ecocide that is very, very intense here at this point.
Can you talk to some of the specific examples of the ecocide that you're experiencing?
Well, if we look at the Gaza Strip, for example, which is 365 square kilometers, in which most of the killing of people happened, that's also where most killing of nature happened. So we did remote sensing, for example, looking month by month at the uprooting of trees and uprooting of greenhouses and uprooting of farm fields. And now more than 94% of the tree cover in Gaza is destroyed, and the ocean, the Mediterranean Sea around Gaza, is polluted, and the water aquifer in Gaza is totally unusable thanks to the Israeli Zionist colonial attempt to destroy lives and livelihood of both people and nature in Gaza. These are just examples, and of course, you know, this did not start 2 years ago. It started decades ago with the foundation of the State of Israel as a colonial enterprise, but it merely intensified in the past 2 years. and become, amazingly brazen in terms of the level and the quality and quantity of destruction.
And you add all the toxic waste created by instruments of war, such as white phosphorus from bombs and so forth, and that gives a whole other level of contamination.
Yes, we have not been able to retrieve soil samples from Gaza, but we did get soil samples, air samples from bombings of the same weapons, American weapons, in Lebanon. And we looked at the radioactive material and others, organic, and non-organic, like heavy metals. And there's heavy, heavy pollution. We don't know if this is possible ever to restore the soils of Gaza or of Lebanon, for that matter, where Israel also bombed. It is a matter of looking at this more detailed by scientific methods coming up. There are some papers now being published, research papers on the destruction of the habitats, the destruction of the earth. We have a paper that's just been accepted about the destruction of habitats for endangered species in the Gaza Strip. In the West Bank, here where I am, I'm speaking to you from Bethlehem, birthplace of Jesus. There's walls, checkpoints, ghetto is created, and there's also an attack on our environment, including building colonial settlements, whether industrial settlements, residential Jewish-only settlements, or military installations and camps in areas that are that used to be rich in habitats and tree cover, and now are basically damaged beyond repair in many places. When you remove a forest to make a colonial industrial settlement and dump toxic waste on the local people and nature.
You're listening to Earth Matters, environmental justice stories from around the globe. This week, we mark the two-year anniversary of Israel's military bombardment of Gaza with a reflection on the environmental damage caused by this genocide. We're talking to Professor Mazin Kamsieh, founder and volunteer director of the Palestine Museum of Natural History and the Palestine Institute of Biodiversity and Sustainability at Bethlehem University. Professor Kamsieh has been sharing some of the impacts of colonization on Palestinian lands and waters, particularly in Gaza, over the past 2 years. But environmental degradation began well before the Gaza War. I asked Professor Kamsieh to share more about the erasure of vegetation and habitat in occupied Palestinian lands.
Well, Israel, as a colonizing enterprise of Zionists, of course, is not going to say, hey, we are damaging nature. Hey, we are ethnically cleansing people from their land, even though that's precisely what they do. So what are they going to say? They have to actually, what they call greenwash colonization. So they actually claim they planted trees. And in reality, they did plant some trees, but it was to replace trees they uprooted. They uprooted millions of trees, and they planted in place of those a fraction in terms of number. But more importantly, they replaced a polyculture of trees, both domestic trees and wild trees. Domestic trees like olives, figs, and almonds, and wild trees like oaks, hawthorn, and carobs. They uprooted all of those, and they planted one kind of tree, which is pine trees. And then they said, this is also important. It shows that we are a green country or a green state, even though this is the opposite of what it is. Israel has destroyed more trees than it planted. It has not made the desert green, as they claim. The opposite, they had made more desert areas, and we have statistics on this. We know how much desertification has spread thanks to the colonial activities. So we have the data on this, but they like to use propaganda to greenwash, as I said, the colonization activities, including the ones that harm nature. So, of course, they claim we have nature reserves, we have national parks, etc. But their nature reserves are so-called nature reserves, are declared by a political entity that employs no naturalists or biologists. The borders are drawn strictly to exclude the indigenous people of the land from these areas. Again, people, my ancestors who lived in relative harmony with nature, with sustainable use of nature, ecosystem services is now the term used in modern conservation biology, but we Palestinians and indigenous people around the world, like the Aborigine in Australia, they lived in harmony with nature for thousands of years, so it is not an issue for us. It's an issue for the colonizers that they want to destroy nature and they want to subjugate it and they want to create the illusion that they are protecting nature by quote-unquote managing it. And I think it's the data clearly show from scientific point of view that this is not the case, that they have not managed nature, they have destroyed nature.
You're listening to Earth Matters, environmental justice stories from around the globe. We're talking to Professor Mazin Kamsie, Bethlehem University, about the struggle for environmental justice in Palestine and the world.
We, the indigenous people, of course, look at our land as any indigenous people around the world. They look at their land. It's the land that sustains us. It's the rivers, it's the mountains, it's the soil, it's the trees, it's the air, it's the rain. This is all for us sacred, and sacred in the sense that, of course, we cannot live without it. We, of course, the colonizers have a different perspective, and they drove us out of our lands and out of our nature and so forth. So my grandfather, for example, was a farmer. He lived off the land. And most Palestinians lived off the land in sustainable agriculture and sustainable pastoralism, keeping goats and sheep and so on, for thousands of years, as I said. So this, 78% to 80% of the people of Palestine before 1948 were living off of food they produced themselves, their families produced themselves, sustainable agriculture and animal husbandry. So that's how we live, that's how we are connected to this nature. It is not an issue of, the cultural significance and the heritage aspects are, of course, connected to that, because they evolve with the people. It's not something we get educated about in terms of our culture. Our culture is our land. Our land is our culture, our heritage, our mode of living, our mode of survival. So everything is connected to the land and to nature and to agriculture and pastoralism and animals and plants, medicines we get from nature, all of this stuff. We have very important areas here. We have to remember, again, this is the Holy Land. Jesus was walking in between olive trees that are still alive here 2,000 years later. So in these olive trees, many of them were uprooted by the occupiers, by the colonizers. So what does this mean to me as, for example, as a Palestinian Christian? Why is this important? Well, it's important because I'm the indigenous person. and I'm living on this land, and I try to survive on this land against all odds, against a colonizer who doesn't want me here and who already made 8.5 million of us refugees or displaced people. I am not a refugee myself, although my grandmother is from Nazareth, I guess a refugee. Most Palestinians are refugees or displaced people now. And those of us who remain on this land are trying to hang on, like hanging on to straws. And when you are drowning, you are trying to survive against all odds, against genocide and ecocide and medicide and scholasticide, destruction of our educational system, against the system of de-development, of removing access to water, removing access to land, removing access to all forms of living to make it impossible for us to live here, because I want to transform it to become a Jewish state of Israel instead of multi-ethnic, multicultural, multi-religious and multilingual society that it was before 1948.
Moving back to the environmental space, can you share your views on the role of the global environmental movement in advocating for Palestine, and also your own views on environmental activism as an act of resistance?
Indeed, the situation is, I'm not pessimistic. I always keep hope alive. I look at the glass half full, as they say, rather than half empty. So I'm always looking at the activism as a positive thing that we can do. Each of us can do something in their own backyard. Each of us can reduce use of fossil fuel, can use solar energy and so forth. Each of us can think of ways that we can not buy from corporations like Starbucks and McDonald's and other American and Israeli companies. We can engage in boycott, divestment, sanctions. And I see this is happening, happening around the world. There's a global awakening, a global uprising, if you want. There's a global environmental movement also. I'm actually involved in the Global South environmental movement, and we're trying to pressure the Global North, as they call it, the countries of the Global North, to stop supporting genocide and ecocide. So there's a growth in these movements, and I see it as hopeful. But it's, by the way, it's the only option available to us. The alternative, as I said, is a global nuclear war and climate change that makes it uninhabitable, that makes our planet uninhabitable for civilization for a while, and then it will be taken over by other species. Life will go on, but humans will never recover from this mistake of allowing capitalist greed to drive global wars, endless wars, and endless attack on our environment.
When the outlook carries such darkness, it's difficult to imagine how hope can survive. But something Professor Kamsieh once said comes to mind.
You've once said, to plant a seed is to plant hope. How do you hold on to hope yourself?
Well, it's not a luxury for us, you know. Despair is not an option. I mean, what else can you do when we're in an existential struggle, as I said, not just Palestinians, but globally we're in an existential struggle. So, you know, despair is not an option, and we must, you know, activism is actually the best antidote to despair. So you keep active, and if I was not active doing what I'm doing, I'm now a full-time volunteer for the past 11 years, 7 days a week, 15 hours a day. I volunteer at this institute that we founded called Palestine Institute for Biodiversity and Sustainability. I actually have two Australian volunteers with us now. Both of them are amazing hard workers helping us, and we welcome volunteers. If any of your listeners would like to connect with us, go to palestinenature.org, one word, palestinenature.org, and you can see how you can help, how you can connect with us so that we can save not just the Palestinian environment and the Palestinian people, but the global environment and the global planet Earth that we share, this big, beautiful planet that that greed is trying to wreck. And we have to work, we have to act. I love the name of your show, Earth Matters, you know, it does matter, you know. So we need to work on this. And so we'd welcome people to help us even remotely. You don't have to come here. You can help us remotely. Connect with us, info@palestinenature.org, and we can connect and see how you can help, how we can together work to a better planet.
Professor Mazin Kamsieh, founder and volunteer director at the Palestine Museum of Natural History and the Palestine Institute of Biodiversity and Sustainability, Bethlehem University in Occupied Palestine. We'll put contact details for the Institute on our webpage at 3cr.org.au/Earth Matters. And a note about Professor Kamsieh's nomination for the 2025 Nobel Peace Prize. The nomination noted his unwavering commitment to peace, nonviolence, and environmental sustainability over 5 decades. Bethlehem University said his dedication to fostering peace and sustainability not only uplifts Palestine, but also inspires the global pursuit of human dignity and justice. That's all for Earth Matters this week. I hope you've enjoyed the program. I'm Claudia Craig. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Earth Matters would like to thank the Community Broadcasting Foundation for their generous financial support and the Community Radio Network for getting this program out to you. Earth Matters is produced in the studios of 3CR on Wurundjeri Country in Fitzroy Nam. If you'd like to get in touch, you can send us an email at earthmatters3cr@gmail.com or message us on Facebook or Instagram. We'd love to hear from you.
We're talking about ecological thinning and subsidised logging, but we basically mean the same things, don't we, here?
Wherever there are chemical corporations around the world, they're constantly trying to chip away at regulations.
Earth Matters, bringing you environmental and social justice stories. From developments in government and industry to the campaigns and communities that are standing up to them. Earth Matters plays at 11 a.m. Sunday and 6:30 a.m. Wednesday. Turn your dial to 855 a.m. or listen online at 3cr.org.au.
While the headlines have subsided, the nuclear power plant is still not under control, with the spent fuel rods removed from only 1 out of 4 reactors.
Law needs to change so that our rights can be recognised, so that decisions in relation to the use and exploitation of our lands is out.
Public transport's great.
What's not great is that unless you've got a radio with you, you can't listen to 3CR when you're on it.
Until now. The Community Radio Plus app lets you listen to us wherever you are.
Get on board and search Community Radio Plus wherever you get your apps.
Help 3CR raise funds by donating your containers. Every eligible drink container that you return to a Container Deposit Scheme recycling point earns 10 cents, which can really add up. 3CR is a donation partner for Victoria's Container Deposit Scheme. The scheme allows you to recycle selected aluminium, glass, or plastic containers and donate the funds earned to a not-for-profit organisation of your choice. Help us raise funds for the station. Search for Community Radio and choose 3CR next time you cash in your cans. Go to cdsvic.org.au for more information.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.